Hi, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for supporting this podcast on the Carolla Digital Network. Everyone here at Carolla Digital is very proud of the shows that we put out every week and are excited about the future of our network. However, a patent troll is threatening that future by suing us. We need to fight back and beat the troll down. If we go down, all the other shows on the other networks you've grown to love are going to go down next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll to donate and find out other ways that you can help beat the patent trolls. Thank you and mahalo.
This episode of the Dr. Drew Podcast is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere with Hulu Plus on your TV or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. Shows like Family Guy, Once Upon a Time, New Girl, Scandal, and more. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/Drew or click on the banner at my website. That is HuluPlus.com/Drew or check out the banner at DrDrew.com. Click through HuluPlus.com.
Hey, this is Bernie Brenner, the co-founder of TrueCar.com, and I'm inviting you to download my new podcast, Extreme Biz Dev. Each week, we're going to look at the new deals that just happened. We're going to talk to great CEOs and heads of biz dev that I respect. Then we're going to talk about things that just piss me off. And of course, no Extreme Biz Dev podcast could finish without giving you the tip of the week. So download and listen to Extreme Biz Dev with Bernie Brenner, which is available every week on PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. A couple of reminders. Please support the people that support this show and support me supporting Carolla so he keeps me alive and allows me to continue this podcast, which I enjoy doing very much. And as I said, we're going to continue to dig deeper on the podcast coming up, do a lot of clinical guys in here as well as interesting personalities such as Bert Kreischer, who's here in a second. I'll introduce you in mere moments, my friend. Be sure to fight the patent trolls. Go to fundanything.com/patent troll to contribute. How are they doing with the funds there?
We're doing well. We're up above 400,000, I believe.
Because if we don't win this suit, podcasting
is doomed. But we need 1.5 million. So we're doing well, but we're a third of the way up.
You can start the fight. Also, don't forget the Swingin' Sounds, the Dr. Drew Podcast. Swingin' Sounds Part 2, the long play, the LP, and Part 3. Chris, when's it coming? Coming soon?
Russell? It might be out by the time you're listening to this.
Fantastic. Part 3.
Check DrDrew.com for it.
Yes. And my wife is actively working on DrDrew.com. Chris, I don't know if you noticed, or Gary, the upgrade. Yeah, it's better, right? Yeah, she's really working on it. And we'll try to do more on the podcast, on the website, so you can get more information. I'll try to do videos and things. We'll try to get that a more active place. So please check out DrDrew.com. Now it is my pleasure to welcome Bert Kreischer. The book is Life of the Party, Stories of a Perpetual Man-Child. Comes out May 27th. Available pre-order on Amazon, so click through at DrDrew.com. You guys know Bert from Trip Flip on Travel Channel.
Yeah.
And I know Bert. Well, wait, let's go to your website. It's BertBertBert.com.
Nice. Four would be ridiculous.
Twitter handle at Bert Kreischer, KreischerKreischer. And I met Bert back when he was named the wildest college party animal in the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Upon which the Van Wilder movie was based, a series was based.
It was the inspiration for the movie. Yeah.
This man was the inspiration for Van Wilder.
That's I sometimes argue I think the journalist was more an inspiration.
Well, I think that's how you told me the story. It's like he was there and you thought, all right, it's game on.
Yeah. And so he wanted to write an article about Florida State. And I was like, and in my head, I was a college kid. And I write about this a tad bit in the book, but there was no real precedent for Snooki or Jay Wow or any of these characters that we all know to be people that reveal their lives. However, that is integral in humans, is to want to be famous or want to be recognized, especially when you have very little talent. And so that was me.
especially young males.
Yes. And like I had no future. I was going to maybe – I had a line on selling carpet in East Georgia. I swear to you.
Did you grow up in Florida?
I grew up in Florida, went to school in Tallahassee, and all my friends got into medical sales right away.
Your cousin is Chris Pratt from Parks and Recreation?
No, I don't know how that got on my Wikipedia.
It's just false.
Yeah. I've never said that, but I like that. I like having that on there, though, because it's like I remember reading Zach Galifianakis' Wikipedia, and it said he was a member of the Omega Phi Psi fraternity, which is a all-black fraternity. And I didn't know if it was true or not, but I wouldn't put it out of Zach's realm of going, I'm pledging, but I'm pledging.
Even if you didn't do it, it's a cool thing to have on your Wikipedia.
Exactly. So write whatever you want on my Wikipedia. So when he came down, he wrote an article about the school, and then I was like, I'm gonna go pretty hard in the paint, and I'm going to show him a really good time, and we got him high, and we did everything, and at the end of the trip, I think what had happened is so many people – I was talking to Stanhope about this yesterday.
Doug Stanhope.
Doug Stanhope was on my podcast. And so
– the podcast is?
Burtcast. And so
– and it's available at Burt.
At Burtcast on whatever.
iTunes.
These are – they're podcasters. Okay. They get it.
You'll find them.
Yeah, they'll find it. And so it'll be a two-parter.
The Stanhope one?
Oh, it's going to be a two-parter.
Did you do anything after dinner with him?
Yes.
He stayed for dinner.
He stayed for dinner with my daughters. It was so surreal. We got literally hammered. I drank.
But wait, slow down. Doug Stanhope drinking?
Me and Doug. Can you believe it?
I can't fucking believe it.
I tried to explain to my wife. I was like, there are moments in – here's the thing I think about drinking, and I'm a big drinker, and I'll finish the Florida State stuff later. It's so pointless. It's how I got here, guys. That's the whole point of that article. But I was talking to Stanhope about wanting to seize the – there are certain type of people that want to seize the day. Like I remember Jimmy and Adam got high with Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, that was good.
That is something you have to do.
Yeah.
If Snoop rolls a joint and passes it around, whether you smoke or you don't, you take a hit.
Is it one of those moments where you go, I can't fucking believe this is – you're like surreal, like you're out of your body observing what's going on?
Like there are moments like that. And last night when Doug is sitting with my two children – and the only caveat is don't talk about Santa Claus.
Because he'll fuck that up.
Oh, he tried to. And I was like, and I gave him real serious, like almost like he had broken coke out of the dinner table. I go, Doug, seriously, don't fuck around with that. Like, they still believe. Don't take that away from them. Like,
your kids are how old?
7 and 9.
Nice.
And so.
Both girls.
Both girls.
That's the blue toenails you're sporting today?
Yeah. Right before we went to Hawaii, we all got toenails.
Did your girls paint them, or you had to go in and actually get it done?
Oh, come on. We're from L.A. We went in to get mani-pedis. There's a certain place they have to go. George is just shy of bringing her own equipment in because she doesn't want Hep C. So, I wanted to take a picture of it because I'm, sitting there, and I'm thinking to my children that I have no concept who Doug is.
Of course, yeah.
They don't know he's one of the great comic voices of our generation. And he's sitting there eating with my kids, and we're just talking about nothing. And they did a riddle. Georgia had a riddle, and the riddle is you have a fox, a bag of grain, and a goose. How do you get them across? And you have one boat. You got to get them across. It's a really simple riddle.
Yeah.
You take the goose over, come back, grab the grain, drop the grain off, pick the goose, come back. Well, my wife figured it out, but Isla knew the answer, but Isla's got she's going to an occupational therapist, so she has a hard time articulating sometimes.
Sure, sure.
And so as she's doing it, Leanne goes, oh, you get the goose in the – and Isla started crying. And Doug goes, you fucking stepped on her punchline. That's how it feels. And he goes, I feel like that, Isla. I felt like that. And Isla connected with him. It was a crazy night. But I was saying to Leanne, my wife, because he leaves, I'm like 11 beers into a 12-pack. And she's like – and I go to crack another beer and watch Game of Thrones. She's like, you – I think you're done. Let's go to bed. And I was like, well, you got to understand. She goes, no, I get it. But those moments, I'm always going to drink for. Despite how healthy I get or how good I get with whatever, those moments, I'll never do coke. But let me tell you something. If I have an opportunity to party with someone that it goes down in the books.
Yeah.
And my book's all about that.
Sure.
My book's entirely all about that. I always look at it that way.
Yeah.
And that's what, and then my wife did not get that. She was like, I don't understand. I can't tell you that without telling a story that I can't tell. But that was my theory. So
you can't tell.
I can't tell you what the argument.
Couldn't tell her that.
I can't tell you the argument I had with my wife because I'd be telling someone else's story about partying with someone really famous.
Oh no!
But let's just suffice to say, if Lenny Kravitz wants to go out and have a bottle of wine, and I've been sober for 4 months, I'm doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going off the
wagon.
That
makes sense.
Yeah.
Don't tell my patients.
I just started flying sober.
Meaning?
Just started flying sober.
But what do you
not
mean?
Not sober, with quotes. I take Xanax now. No, Drew, I was drinking aggressively on planes.
Do you have a
fear of flying.
Do you have alcoholism in your family?
Yeah, of course.
No, so you got to be careful.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful with the Xanax too. You just take it for flying.
I just take it for flying.
Okay.
But here's the problem. This has always been my problem with Xanax is I've always been very cautious of the drug in general simply because – only because I had a friend who tried to get to go to rehab and they wouldn't take him because he was on benzos.
Well, you'll usually get in on benzos. That's not a problem, but it's horrible withdrawal. It probably was not a hospital setting because they commonly have seizures when they come off the.
I want to say it was the place in Malibu.
Yeah, so they probably can't handle it.
Yeah. And so because of that, I've always been very nervous about Xanax.
You should be nervous anyway. It's good. These are powerful drugs that are highly addictive. But, you know, using it once in a while, you haven't lost.
The problem is I fly all the time. So, and now here's my real question. I'm going to give you exact measurements only because I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I'll take half a milligram before the flight.
Yeah.
The problem is I'm flying for like 8-10 hours sometimes.
Yeah. Do you have to take another?
So I have to – well, I do quarter milligrams in between to kind of like just heighten it back up.
Yeah.
And then that's it. But all in all, for a whole day flying, like connecting across country for
0.75.
like I'll take one entire milligram for an entire day.
As long as you're not doing that every day.
I'm doing it a couple nowadays I'm doing it like at least twice a week.
Yeah.
Sometimes a couple, but the problem is the alternative is drinking on planes.
No, it's better than that. But
I feel it internally. I feel it better than that.
Yeah, it's not. Alcohol is a carcinogen.
Stop saying that.
It's
I don't want to talk about cancer. Like, cancer is the scariest fucking thing in the world.
That's why you want to talk to me about my cancer.
What was it like when you got diagnosed?
You know, as a doctor, you kind of know too much, so I could contextualize it. You know, I knew what prostate cancer was. I knew how aggressive or not. It's not like getting diagnosed with pancreatic cancer or lung cancer. I'd go through the floor.
Did you have panic when you got diagnosed?
No, no. A little kind of distant, dissociative kind of feeling, which I tend to do. But, you know, the really bad stuff I know too, and I know too much about that. And if I ever got one of those, it'd be... ugh.
Yeah.
But I also know how to contextualize ones that are indolent and have treatments and what a fucking pain in the ass and I'm too goddamn young for this and oh, give me a break.
Yeah.
And I literally – it was when I was doing pre-production for Life Changers, that daytime show we were doing.
Yeah.
We were in pre-production. We were like going into full production in like a week and a half, and I literally got the call in my producer's office and I'm like thinking, oh, my God. God, I catch a break? I mean, I've got – finally things are kind of looking good here. The work is really exciting. And sorry, man, you got prostate cancer.
Were you sluggish? Were you tired? Were you
– I mean, what made me think I had something?
What made you think?
I did not think anything. What happened was I was it's kind of an interesting story, so it's worth telling. I've written about it. I think I've got it on my website, this article about this particular story. And please check out PCF.org, the Prostate Cancer Foundation, if you're interested at all in prostate cancer. I was in the Caribbean, and on the flight home, I developed violent chills and got sick as shit. I mean, like really sick. Like the toxicity was nothing I'd ever experienced. I after about 4 hours into it, and it was sudden and rapid, and I told him, I need to go to the hospital. I've never said that before.
Really?
So I went to the emergency room. I'd been on an island that had an outbreak of leptospirosis. So I thought, I've got lepto because this is like nothing I've ever experienced. This is so profound. And so I walked into the ER and went, I go, look, I've got lepto. You're going to give me some doxycycline. I'm going to have a Herxheimer reaction, so watch me carefully. I was like, tell them what to do. And they're like, calm down. We'll let us work you up. Like, all right. It turned out I had H1N1 and pneumonia.
H1N1?
The virus. The bird flu.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
Yeah. It was back when that was circulating. It was like 3-4 years ago. And you know, it's a deadly virus potentially. And so I was like, all right. And I was so toxic for about a week. I mean, I could not move. I watched the entire Che Guevara movie series. You know, that 6-hour watched it without budging. I was like, that's how I was just in a zone. And my wife at the end of that went, that was not normal. Something's wrong with you. And I go, what do you mean? It's a bad illness. I got infected.
Yeah.
I'm an older man. That's just the way it goes. You get sick now. And she said, no. Something was wrong. My instinct is something's wrong. I'm like, you need to get a physical. And I went, get a physical. I just went to the ER. I saw an infectious disease doctor.
God, I'm glad I think the way you do.
I'm like I always think, why am I an internist? Why do I need a physical? If I have problems, I go to my subspecialty friends. I've got my cardiology friends are taking care of my blood pressure and cholesterol.
Yeah.
Physical. Come on. She makes the appointment. I go in. And it was a friend of mine and he's a good guy. And I thought, all right, I'll do this. Fine. And lo and behold, my PSA had gone from 0.8 to like 3.9 or 4.1, something like that. Still normal.
Yeah.
But it had gone up suddenly, but normal. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. Let's recheck it in a year. And he goes, no, you're going to see a urologist. And so his instinct.
Urologist is your asshole and dick.
Your dick doctor.
Okay.
Prostate and dick
doctor. Okay.
And again, it was – so it's my wife's instinct to get in there. It's his instinct that something didn't feel right to him. By the books, I should not have – John even had a PSA, should not have gone to the urologist, but he had an instinct that something was not right. Go to the urologist, and he's like, well, it's got to be prostatitis, so let's treat you with prostate massage, which is it made me want to sue Cosmopolitan magazine, all the women's magazines that advocate prostate massage.
Yeah, well, that's all I've – milking, prostate milking. That's all I've ever heard of.
Horribly painful.
Are you serious?
So unpleasant. You can't even imagine. And antibiotics and anti-inflammatories. Did like multiple rounds of that because my PSA wasn't going down. And he's like, well, you know.
But they're feeling in your butt. So
and they couldn't feel any cancer. They're just milking, just trying to get out whatever's inflamed. And now he's like, so now we're weeks into this thing, and I'm like pissed at everybody, like, what overkill? This is so ridiculous. And now he's like, okay, PSA's not coming down, got to do a biopsy. I'm like, really? Are you fucking kidding me? Can't we text this thing in 6 months?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be fine. Relax, everybody. And now got to do it. Did it. Cancer. Couldn't believe
it. Really?
Could not believe it. And it was a low-grade cancer, but it was a lot of it. Which is kind of a weird – usually the grade is how we judge what to do with the cancer. Mm-hmm. But there was a large volume, and it was in a weird location in my prostate too, an unusual location, unusual volume. So already I'm in a weird category. But low intensity, low aggressiveness of the tumor. So then I went and consulted with guys over at Cedars-Sinai, and they said, you can go on active surveillance. You're a perfect candidate for a biopsy every 6 to 12 months.
And just see if it grows.
And we'll just watch this thing and see if it becomes more aggressive or if it grows or how it behaves. I'm like, it makes sense to me because this is a low grade tumor that I thought shouldn't even been diagnosed.
Yeah.
The urologist even told me, he goes, they were aggressive in getting to this. By the book, you shouldn't even been diagnosed. We shouldn't even know about this. And I agreed. I was like, well, fuck that.
Well, yeah, but you do know about it.
Okay, I know.
Yeah, I don't know my wife sleeping with my neighbor, but now that I know, I got to deal with it.
But it's right. I have to deal with it. And so we'll watch it. And he said, 30% of the time it gets better, 30% of the time it stays the same, and 30% of the time we have to do something about it.
Okay.
So it's kind of going along, and he's like, each time he gets a biopsy, he's like, he's uncomfortable. And then again, he's finally like, I can't do this. We got to do something because it's just something didn't feel right to him. Again, there was by the book, I shouldn't have had a PSA. I shouldn't have been biopsied. I shouldn't have been diagnosed, and I shouldn't have been followed. But all of it, all of the instinct of my wife, my first doctor, my urologist, all those instincts.
Now, how are you feeling physically during this time?
Well, physically, I don't feel any different than normal, except the biopsies fucked me up. And I didn't realize how badly they fucked me up until about 2 months ago. So this all started 3 years ago, mind you.
Yeah.
That I would afterwards for a week, I'd be really weak. And then realize in retrospect, I was messed up for 3 to 4 months after each one where I'd be like kind of weak and not right. And just this weakness that was always with me and fatigue. I remember the thing that really stands out for me now is that I like running. I like doing that at least once, twice a week. Mm-hmm. I would think about running and think, oh no, I just can't. I just can't do it. I just couldn't contemplate, couldn't.
And it's not because you're hungover.
No, I was taking care of myself, generally. Yeah. I just was just kind of weird weakness. And I was on lots of antibiotics because it kept – I had pain, all kinds of crazy stuff. And anyway, so now they're like, okay, it's time for that prostatectomy. Big surgery. It's a big surgery. I'm like, fine, let's do this. That's fine. I'm ready. I will jump ahead to the punchline here. When they took the prostate out, there was a tributary. Like here's the mass. There was one finger that was sticking out going for Mecca. Now, we couldn't have seen that with the biopsies or the ultrasounds, but had they not done the prostatectomy, like within 2 months of when we did it.
Going for Mecca.
Could have been trouble.
Oh, fuck.
Could have been trouble.
Oh, God.
As my mom said, why didn't they do it earlier? I go, fuck, why didn't they do it earlier? They timed it perfectly.
Yeah.
It was absolutely perfect timing. So, and now I'm 98% cured, not 100%, but 98% cure. And it was a fucked up operation. It's a big operation. I was messed up for 6 months.
Did you go through chemotherapy too?
No, I didn't. Didn't need anything else. It was just and they do it with a robot. And I was out in the operating room 6 hours. And they carefully preserve the blood supply and nerves to your penis so everything works normally.
Okay.
And you just, no more semen production.
Oh, you don't make semen?
No more semen.
Oh.
Yes.
So what does your dick do? Just dry heave it out? Just
dry heave it.
And you're like, oh, let's walk it off, big guy. You've had too much.
That's, I like the way you're like, oh, no semen. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's no great. Cleanup. Blowjobs all the time. What's, there's guilt-free blowjobs. All the blowjob with none of the calories. So wait, so okay. So I thought I had I thought I had testicular cancer one morning or one evening.
You felt something in there.
I thought I did.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't find it again. And I, my nut was hurting.
Oh yeah.
But I think but what had happened is I had caught for my daughters. This was actually the reason I stopped drinking on planes. Was I drank all night on a plane and I landed and I'd gone straight to softball practice and I caught softball and I was squatting as a catcher and that night my like left nut was hurting. I was like, God, that's odd. And so I felt it. I thought I felt something.
Yeah.
A panic ensued. Like that ice cold water down through your veins panic.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I looked for it again and I couldn't find it.
By the way, the drinking all night and then stopping does not do good things to panic.
Oh,
it's like an incubator for panic.
So I don't really sleep much that night. I wake up the next morning and it's not there really. And I call my internist internist.
Yeah.
And she's like, you don't feel it? She's like, you know, a testicular lump. She's like, you're out of the age range for one.
Yeah. And it's pretty obvious when you have
it. She's like, and it's like the size of a lemon.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? So I call my buddy Duncan Trussell, who had testicular cancer.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I was hunting Sasquatch one time and I thought I had it in my other nut. But he goes, sometimes you can pull something from exercise.
Well, you had epididymitis. And so the epididymis can kind of swell a little bit. You may have felt that.
Yeah.
That's kind of a common thing.
And so it's gone now.
Yeah.
I haven't really had it.
Yeah, it's epididymitis.
And I've been working out. And I slowed down working out. But the fear.
I can check. No, I guess we shouldn't do that.
Do not. I don't even want to know.
But you should go ahead and have it just checked. It's really easy. And when you have testicular cancer, it feels like imagine you had a pebble, a rock stuck in there.
Yeah.
It feels like a rock.
Yeah, I don't. And so, they feel very normal.
Yeah.
I've been touching them a lot. After that, you go in. But it's interesting. I check my testicles the same way I check my mentions on Twitter. Like kind of casually, just looking for the good ones. Anything bad, I'm like, I didn't see that. I don't know what you're talking about. I've tried to make great strides to clean up my lifestyle a tad bit.
Good.
Just because I don't want to go out like that. I don't think I'll get cancer. I'm gonna have a stroke. Is how I'm gonna go out.
Do you have high blood pressure?
Oh yeah. Right now, 130 over 80 is where I'm rocking.
Take meds?
No, but no. And you know what? My dad wants me to take blood pressure medicine, and he wants me to take
cholesterol medicine.
Propecia.
Why?
Because he says it's
your head.
It's at, well, I'm losing my hair. Yeah. That's obvious. But it's he said it stops prostate cancer.
Oh, they maybe not.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I'll roll the dice on a maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary liked that.
But it can get a also, full head of hair.
It,
and,
it can
and
also fuck with your libido and erectile function and stuff. My patients that take propecia eventually get side effects in my experience.
Really? Then I don't need it.
Blocks testosterone. You know?
I can spill.
I want to take testosterone. I want to block testosterone.
Can we take how?
No, that could we don't know, but could potentially increase your risk of prostate cancer.
Really?
But I don't have to worry about that.
Oh.
I know, right?
Have you ever taken it?
No. I told the surgeon when I sat down, I go, you're taking my prostate out, and in 1 year you're putting me on testosterone, I'm telling you. But then I didn't realize I was feeling so shitty from all the biopsies. I thought that's maybe what the problem was. I'm feeling a lot better now, so I don't know.
I gauge my health by how I feel. I get stressed out.
Yeah.
I have a ton of energy, and I'm completely fine. My biggest problem is running is plantar fasciitis. I think I messed up.
Yeah.
I think I genuinely messed up my right foot. Like, I'm getting baby toe.
You have to really be careful with the shoe.
Well,
that's extreme heel support. You got to get a heel cup and then a lot of arch support and all that stuff.
It's hard. I was playing flag football and I heard a pop.
Oh.
And I went, and I could not stand on my foot for a long time. But then, obviously, no one can just take 3 weeks off of walking.
Yeah.
So I get back on and I start walking and then I have nerve damage on the top of my foot and it's like one of my toes is atrophying.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's so.
Have you had a foot person look at it?
Went in. They took x-rays.
The foot doctor, not an orthopedist, but a foot specialist.
Let me tell you how I was raised in Florida. You don't mess around with podiatrists and chiropractors.
Right.
That was the two things my dad was like, don't ever go to a podiatrist and don't go to a chiropractor or a therapist, but that's changed. My dad goes, if you go to a therapist, you look at his car, and if his car's dirty, you fucking walk away.
What'd your dad do for a living?
He's a lawyer.
Oh, well.
He's like,
why the dirty car?
Because he's like, if he didn't take care of his car, he doesn't take care of his life.
What if he's too busy being a therapist?
That's my dad's theory. Look, my dad's half-baked with all his theories to begin with. But yeah, he was like...
You saw my car on sides bashed in?
Oh,
I don't have time to get that fucking door fixed.
My dad... I told my dad, Drew, the side of his door is just fixed. He goes, well, you had cancer for 3 years. Didn't even do anything about it. That makes sense. But you look really healthy.
Yeah, I am. Right, I feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm good. And I But I take blood pressure medicine, cholesterol medicine.
What's your blood pressure?
Right now, about 130 to 82.
Okay.
Yeah, but I take two different blood pressure medicines to get there.
Yeah, mine, drinking.
Oh, that'll raise your pressure. Like
drinking
crazy.
Was my big thing. Yeah. Both drinking on flights.
Both when you're drinking and coming off alcohol, both raise your blood pressure.
Yeah, well, I was talking to Stanhope about it yesterday. Yeah. I got to the place when I was getting off flights and I was drinking, you know, flying LA to Zurich and drinking for the whole flight.
For what?
For a trip flip.
Oh, right.
So, like, because I have a fear of flying. So, I wouldn't drink the whole flight, but I would definitely drink more than anyone should drink.
Are you getting over the fear of flying?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm slowly.
Yeah.
Now I'm actually, I could never take Xanax without drinking on Xanax on a plane. And
see, I think if you can have one flight where you are really free of anxiety, like where you, whether it's pharmacologically induced or otherwise, that mastery of being, hey, I can fly and not feel anxiety. It's almost a learning experience.
I'm a bad test market. What is it? Test sample group for that because I've jumped out of planes. I've jumped bungee jumped. I was the first person to jump off Stratosphere. I was I think it's a mixture of the mundaneness of it and the fact that I'm just going to work. You know, like, you know, people go, "Oh, get driving a car, it's so dangerous." You're just going to work. I think that's part of that plays into it. But I mean,
so it's a weird thought.
I was a stunt pilot for a day in a plane where I did hammerheads and fell to the earth and pulled out at the last minute.
And that didn't fuck you up.
It did, but I did it. Yeah. Like, and that's one of the things. And it's like, I definitely search out, like, we're going into production for Trip Flip season 4. And I was like, hey, and I'm not a big thrill seeker, but I was like, listen, when we're in New Zealand, we need to jump out of a plane. That's one of the number one places to jump out of planes. Like, and I was like, I'll jump out of a plane in, like, Belize, New Zealand, like, in different places. But, like Montana, I think I got it. Like, I'm good. Upstate New York, I'll pass. But, like, give me, like, Belize over the blue hole and I'm in.
Explain that to me.
Because Travel Channel messed me up in this, is that once you start accruing these amazing life experiences, you really kind of, you kind of seek them out and you have urges for them. It's like you stay on the home long enough and not doing stand-up, and you're like, man, I miss riding horses on the top of a mountain in Colorado.
You do it by yourself? You ever do it with your family?
No. So for Travel Channel, I take two people on the adventure of a lifetime. I find them on the street. I pay for it. I plan it. And it is the best job you've ever had in your entire life. It is the greatest job ever. So I take them, I plan it, and we go all around the world.
But I'm just wondering if you ever get to experience these things with your family. Yeah. Or is it always just, yeah, doesn't that kind of feel?
Yeah. Well, I did one. I think I showed you last time I was here, but like I did one. I took my girls to Hawaii, and they had said they wanted to do what we did on Trip Flip. So I took them into a shark cage, and we went swimming with sharks.
How old were they?
7 and 9. This was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And it was and like when I take people on these adventures, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But when you take your daughters and you have them experience life and you see it through their eyes,
yeah,
and you're the one to share that with them, and you're that kind of conduit of adventure, there's no better. I've never felt like a better dad in my entire life.
Well, that's why I wonder if it is. This may not be the right word, but if it's lonely when you don't get to bring your family with you, or if you have a desire to mix it up. I don't know.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. There's a ton of loneliness to it, but you know, there's a ton of, look, I'll tell you emotions that run through your head that I'm very honest with. And I did Alison Rosen's podcast, and I said to her, I'm very raw. This promoting this book has made me extremely uncomfortable.
Why?
Because, and it's what I was saying with Stanhope last night. I feel like I am talking about me a lot. Like, I'm like promoting me like a shameless self-promoter. And I was never a fan of that artist in life. Now, there are times I didn't know it was happening, but that I was still a fan of the artist. And I hope to God that I'm doing some of that. But just like, hey, I robbed a train in Russia. You know, like at some point I'm like, I, as a consumer, I'm like, ugh, I get it. Like, and so I'm very hyper aware and I'm very critical. So this, all the promotion of the book has been uncomfortable. That's why doing this podcast with you is so easy. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, in a heartbeat. But like, if I didn't know you and I didn't know that we could have a conversation about your cancer or about my drinking or about all the other stuff, I'd be like, I'd be a mess.
Well, I've always thought that it's got to be weird to be in the public eye in the media just because, hey, it's me. You know what I mean? As opposed to, I have something I'm doing for people. And Trip Flip is, you're doing something for people.
Yes. I am so very proud.
Probably, right. So that's probably very comfortable for
I'm
you.
I'm very proud promoting Trip Flip, and I love promoting Trip Flip because not only am I doing it, not only taking two people, but I'm promoting a project that 150 people have worked on.
Yeah, you're right. You're helping people. You're helping. And to me, that seems like a rewarding reason to use media, be in the media, and stuff like that. That's the only reason I can imagine being in it. I guess if you're an actor or a performer or something, you're entertaining people, and you can think of it that way.
Being a comic is under the radar. Because being a comic, you are promoting your comedy, and you are promoting to come see me live, but I'm not saying like – I'm not on the air going, hey, see me live. Come see me. This is why I'm here. I'm just being funny so I can just be a stand-up and be funny on the radio. Like the first time I did Loveline, I didn't have to do anything. And I just remember just being in to hang out because I was a comic.
Yeah.
And I remember the girl said that – I never forget that one of my favorite things I've ever said in my entire life was – some girl said that when she had an orgasm, her vagina closed up.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like Chinese finger cuffs? Yeah. And I remember on the guy, and I said, so when you guys leave, you have to, like, you're moving a couch, you have to walk out together. And I laughed so hard, and you laughed, and in that moment, I'm not promoting anything.
Right.
I'm just being me, and it's being light, and we're being funny.
Yeah.
When you write a book, you wrote it by yourself.
Yeah.
You are then taking what you wrote, and now, by the way, you're putting yourself in the ring with Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, and let's just call it what it is. You're putting yourself in the ring with Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
And Chelsea Handler and Bald Brian and all these people who wrote a book. Also, Bald Brian's book. I read the beginning. I'm like, motherfucker, the guy had cancer. How am I gonna supposed to match up to that? And I read Adam's foreword, and I was like, son of a bitch. I just robbed a train. And I met Will Smith and like, I'm not underselling my book. It's a great book.
Yeah.
But that vulnerability that comes out of just going, these are cool stories that I did.
They're mine. Yeah.
Yeah. It is weird. It is surreal. I think
Brian's book just made the New York Times bestseller list. He's very proud of that. I think the book's. Did you read it?
All I read was the Adam's foreword.
It's good.
Yeah.
I no bullshit. I was like, oh, I read your book. You know, I do a lot of book reading of people, friends' books and stuff. And at the beginning, I was like, all right, Brian, all right. And then I was like, oh, my God, this is so compelling and so insightful and so raw and honest and so accurate. I would recommend it to patients if they're
really
struggling with the system. Oh, absolutely. Because not only will you really learn some tools, some really effective tools, it's a great story. It's a great story of survival and relationships.
I thought he just wrote a book. I didn't know what it was about because – when you buy Brian's or Adam's, mine's like, oh, people also liked and under there, which I was like, thank fucking God. and so I was like, oh, I wonder in my head, I'm like, oh, I wonder what he wrote a book about. And then I read the title. And I'm like,
oh, you didn't know.
I didn't know. I had no clue.
You didn't know he had brain cancer?
No.
Oh my God.
So as soon as I saw that, I think I had heard of it, but I didn't put two and two together and go, I thought, oh, he wrote a book about working with Adam.
Oh, no, yeah.
And I was floored. And I read Adam's foreword, and I was like, purchase.
It's not only brain cancer, but it's one that he's one of the first of a group that lived more than 6 months with it.
You said the death sentence.
I was – when Adam first told me, I was like, oh, my God. That's just so awful.
Yeah.
It's just the worst.
Yeah.
But for the grace of God, the new treatment came along right then. I mean, then. And he just happened to be with a doctor that happened to be willing to try it.
I'd be interested to hear what Brian's, I'll just call him Brian, what Brian's insight is to people liking his writing. Because, you know, I think you want to dismiss it and go, oh, thanks, yeah, whatever. You know, like it's hard to even take a compliment, I think.
No, I think he – because I told him that, and he was very appropriate in terms of how he accepted it. And I like the part in the book, too, where he takes the test or people – like, what do people not like about you kind of test? Oh, you haven't read this yet.
I haven't read it.
Yeah. He's very – he takes himself on.
I'm in the middle of Jason Ellis's book right now.
Oh, my God. You read all my friends' books.
Jason Ellis's book is
– I did him – he was on Loveline last night.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
He's an interesting freaking dude.
Isn't he?
Like –
I want to do a reality TV show with him where he and I are the odd couple.
I mean, you read the. I read the beginning. I read the very first.
Oh, he was he and his girlfriend, episode 109 on this podcast.
Really?
About it, yeah.
The girlfriend that gives him blowjobs every morning and brings women into the room?
Right, and lets him have sex with other girls.
Fuck! Me and him are on totally different spectrums. He's like, unless I have the kids. I go, if I don't have the kids, I'm just sleeping. He's, yeah, I started reading his book. I got Brian's on my Kindle. And I think I pre-ordered Adam's. So I'm
see
sure
to me
I have
that's
that
the best endorsement of your book, that it fits with all those other guys we know.
Hey, let me tell you something. I pray to God it just does. I hope it just does well enough to get back my advance. And then they go, "You want to write a second one?"
Yeah,
it's going pretty good right now. Pre-orders are pretty strong, and so and it's a good book. And it, like I said, I would be remiss if I didn't promote something that I truly believed in.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with my book. I am very honest to a fault.
Like well, that's everybody that you've just mentioned does the same thing.
Yeah. And
that's what makes everybody compelling.
Yeah, well.
So I would expect nothing less from you.
Yeah, like I wrote stories in there that I'm like, here we go.
Oh, yeah, I'm going public with this now.
Yeah, like and like I'd be shocked if no one wanted to party with me again.
Wow.
Like if because I'm like, you know, I have some very famous stories that have gotten around, and so I was like, well, let me tell you exactly how it went. Like the Russian, when I robbed the train in Russia with the Russian mafia,
yeah.
I am to the point where I kept two people's names out of it because they would lose their jobs. And I was like, I don't want to like anyone to lose their jobs. But like, I am literal with that story. And I tell you beginning to end how that happened.
Sketch it out for people so they know what they are going to get into.
I went to Russia. I took Russian classes on accident. I went to Russia.
Because you were told you get a B.
Yeah, a C.
A C.
A C. Okay. She needed 14 kids in the class to make the class happen. And so I was like, Strasvutia, bitches, I'm here. And so I took Russian 1, 2, 3, and 4. I always say this. Russian 4 was taught in Russian. I sat there like an immigrant at the DMV all day long, just like I didn't know. Literally, everyone was talking around me. I have no idea what they're saying. I was having dreams at the time. I wrote this in the book. I was having dreams at the time in Russian where I was going, I don't know what you're saying. So then we go to Russia. And this is 1995 when the mob ran everything, and they told us that. We got these two young gangsters. So my goal automatically was to make friends with them, and I did. The very first night, I had a sentence plan, and I'm giving a very short version of this story only because I tell it. It's like 12 minutes long.
Yeah.
But I told them. I tried to say something to them, and it didn't come out right, and I panicked, and I was at their door, and all I said to them was, "I am the machine," in Russian, and they thought that was hilarious.
You have a version of this on YouTube from Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah, I tell it on Rogan's. Yeah. I tell it on a stage show.
Go check out that Joe Rogan version. We'll try to put a link to it on this page. It's
okay.
Animated like exactly like South Park. It's awesome. It's like 9 or 10 minutes. It's very cool.
It is. I'll tell you what. It is a story that will be told at my funeral. It is my get her done. Like when I go on stage, everyone shouts the machine.
Yeah.
And like I'll be walking with my kids and kids will see me like in the Irvine Spectrum at like Dave and Buster's or something. And they'll be like, oh my God, it's the machine.
And what you don't know, Gary, is the first time he told that story was on Loveline.
Yep.
And you didn't really think that much of the story at the time.
I didn't think.
And I was like, fuck, I can't believe this.
You can find that online. You can find that telling. And it's, I think someone just comes in, calls and goes, Bert, tell them about the time you robbed a train in Russia.
I'm sure Giovanni, Superstar Giovanni's got that lined up for us somewhere.
Do you find it?
Super fan, rather.
We'll find it.
Yeah.
We'll put it on the website. Right.
And I literally was like, oh, yeah. And I kind of glanced, like, brushed over it.
Well, you didn't want to tell the whole story, as I recall. It's like, it's a long story. I'm like, no, I'm interested.
Yeah. And then I told it. I'll never forget this. You guys were testing for co-hosts.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in the running. I just was going in as a guest.
Was somebody else there with me? I don't remember.
Nope.
I think it was just you and me, right?
Yeah. You were testing for co-hosts.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was – but it was the week after.
Yeah.
And you guys still didn't have a co-host. So you're like, we'll come in. And then you called the next day and they're like, was there an Annie that worked there?
Anne, yeah.
Anne worked there. And she was like, hey, Drew asked if you'd come in again and tell the story again. And I was like, are you serious? And you're like, yeah. So I came back in and I told the story again the next night. I told the story again. And in my head, I'm like, wow. And I made it a little funnier and it got better. And then by the time
it percolated with me. I was like, I got to hear more about this.
You said to me, you're like, this is your movie.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad heard that. My dad is a fan of yours because he thinks you got it right. Like, he's not a fan of all the radio I do, but you got it right. And my dad goes, buddy, I heard Drew liked that story. You gotta think about writing a book. You gotta think about writing a book. And that was the first, like, kind of step to write a book. And then I told it on Rogan, and it blew up. And then I have these other stories that didn't make in the book. Like, I got fired from Barnes & Noble for working out my underwear in the basement. That didn't make the book.
Working out in your underwear?
And, yeah, the old Astor Place Barnes & Noble, I would go down to the basement. Because you ever have a job, you probably haven't, but you ever have a job where you lift boxes?
Yeah, yeah.
And then like halfway into the day, you're like, this is a good bi workout.
Oh, I see.
And then you start doing shrugs as you're doing it. Yeah. You're like, oh, shit, I'm working out. And so in my head, I was doing that. And then I was like, and then this gay kid, the first real gay friend I ever had, told me, he's like, oh, if you go to the basement, like they can, you take the freight elevator down, no one can come down on you. So you got it, the basement, it's like your own private office.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, nice. So I went down there. And I just one day, and I was lifting books, and I was like, fuck it, I'm going to bang out push-ups and sit-ups. But there was no air conditioning in the Astor Place Barnes
okay.
Noble.
Okay.
So I had to take all my clothes off because I'd sweat through my clothes.
Yeah.
And then I have to wait till I cooled down, throw my clothes back on, go upstairs, walk around. I'm eating diet fuel at the time. Remember diet fuel?
Yes.
It's like I'd taken 9 of those a morning, and I'm just tweaking, like, and I'm doing travel books at the time, and I'm just like, and then my manager, Dwayne, was like, I shouldn't say his name, real name, but whatever. My manager, Dwayne, was like, hey, spent a lot of time in the basement. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you know we have cameras, right? And I was like, oh, shit. By the way, this is before YouTube. The only video sharing portal I knew of was called Zoom Culture. And had this been now, I'd be a celebrity.
It'd be everywhere.
I'd be a celebrity. Find that video. Please, Dwayne, put that video up. I know I'm not, I know I don't look real. And by the way, okay, maybe Dwayne, don't put it up. Let me, real talk.
Yeah.
This is, by the way, I'm obsessed right now with small details of the truth.
Okay.
This is why I wouldn't want that video up. I was going through at the time thinking I had genital warts. So I was also checking my dick like 100 times a day. And it didn't help that there was what is now WebMD, but back then was a big book in the basement.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just was going through every venereal disease.
Right.
Musculum? Is that what I have? Musculum?
Molluscum contagiosum.
Oh my God, I got something. And I was checking my dick aggressively. I remember, Drew, I went to the doctor and he was like, I was like, I got genital warts. And he was like, have you been? You've been touching your penis a lot? I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, what else? And I was like, dipping it in vinegar? Oh. And he's like, okay, let's stop doing that right now. He's like, never. We're not doing that ever again.
So you
soak it?
So you read that you could put 0.25% acetic acid on the penis and the pre-wart would show up.
Yes.
And so you were looking for the pre-warts.
So I was
on a daily basis.
I was soaking it in vinegar, watching Quantum Leap at night.
Oh, my God.
Drinking a tall boy. And I would just sit there, and then I didn't even know what I was looking for.
This is proof positive, by the way, for the reality, the notion that comedy is in the details.
Oh yeah,
I know, Gary. I got to take a break. All right, he's literally through the window where I'm looking. Sure. They're like, break.
Sorry.
All right, I'll take a break. We'll come back to a couple calls. Be right with you. Allison
Rosen. Hey everyone, it's me, Allison from Allison Rosen is your new best friend. I am sitting here with this week's guest, Sarah Colonna. Sarah, why should they listen this week?
Well, I think I reveal a lot about myself, about my haircut that I had when I was in my 20s that was bad. The ma'am from Webster.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You have curly hair, but you got a perm.
Yes.
I wanted one, even though someone showed me a woman with like poodle hair and said, this is what you'll have. And I said, I don't care. I want it anyway.
Yeah, but then you had a divine intervention.
That's right.
So people can find out about that.
I'll have to listen to find out what took me out of perm's harm's way. We also talked about you being on the drill team.
Yes, and I would like for people to tell us what the what drill team was in their high school, because I'm very confused sometimes by it, and I just don't want to say that I was on the wrong thing anymore. So we need people to listen and then determine what that was at their school.
Yeah, and we talked about how you met your sports boyfriend.
Yes.
Probably don't refer to him as your sports boyfriend.
No, I do. Actually, that's how I introduce him.
Tell them who he is.
My boyfriend, John Ryan, from the Seattle Seahawks. And we met on Twitter, so there's a story behind that. You guys, it can happen to you too. Twitter brings everyone together.
That's right. And we talked about how you met Chelsea Handler and your friendship with her and working with her on the show and all that.
Yes. So, and one of your past guests, Jen Kirkman, how I witnessed her breakdown that she spoke about on your show.
That's right. It involves Klonopin and alcohol. All right. So you guys make sure to listen. Subscribe to Allison Rosen is your new best friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you.
Allison's your new best friend.
Hey, it's Dr. Drew. Is your computer running slow? Well, MyCleanPC.com can clean it up and speed it up today. Now, you might ask yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's frustrating, right? Well, opening infected email attachments, downloading music and games can slow your computer down. Over time, running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors to build up on your computer. MyCleanPC can help. First, go to mycleanpc.com, and in minutes, you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what is slowing down your computer. Then simply activate MyCleanPC software to clean out the junk, the internet clutter, and even remove viruses. And MyCleanPC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With MyCleanPC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to MyCleanPC.com and get a free computer diagnosis, and then simply activate MyCleanPC software to optimize your computer performance. Go to MyCleanPC.com today and find out what is slowing down your computer. That is MyCleanPC.com. Buying a car can be a stressful experience, but TrueCar is changing car buying forever. Yes, TrueCar helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Last month, over 45,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network and TrueCar.com. Users save an average of $3,046 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. And the third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Every day, TrueCar.com users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. Of course, everyone's tried Hulu on the computer, but Hulu Plus, that's where you got to go because it's much more. You can watch current seasons, current episodes of favorite shows like Modern Family, Daily Show, Scandal, and every episode of shows like Nashville, Lost, Doctor Who, and you get ad-free movies and kid shows as well. So now more than ever, there's a lot to watch. Take control with Hulu Plus. Stream shows and thousands more as much as you want, wherever you want, whenever you want. Works on your computer, smart TV, Roku, Apple TV, Xbox, PlayStation. Let's face it, it's any streaming device you already got, Hulu Plus will work there. You can even watch it on your iPhone, iPad. Obviously, things go where you go. You'll get access to originals you cannot get anywhere else, so check out the new show Deadbeat, a comedy about a pot-smoking guy who talks to ghosts. This I got to see. Most of my pot-smoking patients just talk to themselves. This guy's actually talking to ghosts. So binge on all 10 episodes starting April 9th, and for only $7.99 a month, you get these shows anytime, anywhere. It's like 25 cents a day. Right now, sign up at HuluPlus.com/Drew and get 2 weeks full access free. Again, we're giving away free stuff. I don't know how they do it, but let's do it. HuluPlus/Drew. Whole extra week more with a special offer when you sign up at HuluPlus.com/Drew. So get with it and start streaming TV now with Hulu Plus. Hey, it's a little time to show some love to our friends at GoToMeeting. Of course, building a strong relationship with your team is key for any of business. Need to meet, collaborate, coworkers and clients on a regular basis, brainstorming. Now you can gather everyone without having to gather everyone in the same room with GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. Powerful and simple. We love GoToMeeting. We use it here at Corolla. Strangely, whenever we have a meeting, not just with staff, but with other potential advertisers, we use GoToMeeting. Sign up for GoToMeeting from your computer or mobile device. Launch your first meeting in seconds. You'll be able to share the same screen to collaborate on projects in real time. So you understand what I'm saying? You'll be able to take your documents, throw them up on the screen, and work on one of those documents while you're having a high-definition video conference. You can see and hear everybody. Turn on your webcams to see each other face-to-face. So start the new year with a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting. Visit GoToMeeting.com today. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Dr. Drew, D-R-D-R-W. That is GoToMeeting.com, promo code Dr. Drew. Meeting is believing. Is this from the new, the volume 3?
Sure is.
That's right. I recognize. See how different this one sounds? This is volume 3 of the Swinging Sounds of Dr. Drew podcast. It's cool, right?
What is it, Swinging Sounds of Dr. Drew's podcast?
We just picked cool music that we think would make great background music, sort of Mad Men-esque parties. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was just really Chris's brain.
Creating
sound.
Moods.
Creating moods.
And can I tell you the podcast I tried to do? I want beats per minute. I want podcasts for 30 minutes of songs I like, all taken and at like 150 beats per minute so I can jog to them.
Interesting.
And I don't mind. I wouldn't mind a trainer. I wouldn't mind a trainer.
In the middle of that.
I did it on my podcast. I did it with Chris Ty Walker, and I had him come to my man cave and work me out. And he did his run for 15 minutes, and it was aggressive. And then I was like, everyone do it. Post it up. The problem is he used music, and I needed to fix some music. So I wouldn't mind beats per minute, just something cool. Like, you know, like
some music to work out in.
Yeah, because
Chris, volume 4.
All right.
Let's get work on that.
Yeah. I'd love it. I'd really love that.
The workout music. It's an interesting idea. A really interesting idea. Because I'm all about working out. I'm all about encouraging people.
Do you know
to
what
do
else
that.
I want?
What's that?
Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Tell me if you think this could work.
Yeah.
This is my dream. This is my other dream podcast, and it is a dream podcast. What we do is you listen to it. Because I listen to a lot of podcasts when I sleep. Listen to Dan Carlin when I sleep. And then what he talks about, I end up dreaming about. So I dream I'm one of Genghis Khan's soldiers.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I have really active dreaming also. And so what I want to do is a straight up dream guided podcast where I sit you down. I go, all right, you're going to sleep. This is going to be a 4-hour podcast or a 3-hour, whatever you can put 3 hours up. And I am going to guide you through your dreams. So we get you into relaxation. We get you sleeping. And then I go, and we're in. And I'm like, all right, there's a castle.
I think you need a sleep expert to tell you how to do that.
Yeah. Do you know anyone?
Not off the top of my head. And probably it would be really interesting is there's all these devices for your – or apps for your iPhone that can tell you when you're in REM sleep. And that maybe you could activate the dream sequence then. Oh, wouldn't that be great?
I just want to lead them through adventures.
Yeah.
Like you're in. You see a castle. You're walking up to the castle and there's a beautiful maiden.
See, I don't think I would respond to that. Oh, here it comes. Here's the music.
Yeah.
This is the music you'll be playing.
You don't think what?
I don't think everyone responds to that because, like I said, I think what would happen to me immediately is I'd wake up. I don't think I can do that. I just – when I'm REM, I'm very light sleeping, and I have lots of dreams, and they're good. But what are you saying there, Gary? Say that into the mic, whatever you're – you may hear a car starting up.
Awesome.
What does that mean?
That means we're about to start a car, and I was trying to type you a note to tell you not to talk about it because the mics wouldn't pick it up. But you
start a car in here.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right.
We're in the Corolla man cave, and he's got the race cars in the back here, and somebody's going to fire up a race car.
I can't walk
in
here.
Why would you want that to be on the podcast? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, hey, listen, Bert is into the honest details.
I love the small details of a story.
Don't exclude anything.
We pull the curtain back sometimes.
Sometimes. Why not?
I live with my curtain wide open, which can be troublesome in a marriage.
Let's open some curtains. Let's get – speaking of marriages, here's Keith, 30, from North Carolina. Keith.
Hi, hey. Dr. Drew. I'm a huge fan of you. I'm super nervous.
Good to talk to you. What's going on?
I've been married to my wife for 3 years, and things have been really breaking down. She doesn't wear her wedding rings anymore. She used to at least put them on for meeting my family. I could look good, and now she stopped doing that.
Forget where you are now. What got you here?
Pushed me to call?
No. What's the trouble? What happened? How'd you get from a happy marriage to where you are now?
We stopped doing things together. I'm not a very communicative person, really. And I think that I stopped talking to her, and that she kind of just started losing interest or something.
So let's sort of summarize that. Let's call that not being able to meet her emotional needs. Like, she had need for connection and
that sounds fair.
Emotional contact. And women need a lot of that. And when they don't get that, they start to look for it elsewhere. Has she cheated or anything?
Well, she spends a lot of time at her male friend's house.
Her male friend's house?
Yes.
No, oh, Jesus.
You can't – that's not – you're not allowed to do that.
That's no good.
Yeah.
Does everybody want – do you guys want to try to salvage this thing?
I don't know. I mean, we have sad days where I'm like, I just want out of here, and good days where – maybe we can fix this.
Well, it sounds like it's to the point where you absolutely need professional help. It's in meltdown mode. It's not like it's sort of chugging and you know, wondering why we can't make a better connection. It's like we've lost the connection and she's hanging with somebody else. That is time to sit down and get honest.
And some guys allow the spiral of the relationship to dictate the relationship. Now, do you see her in the morning? Without any resentment, do you see her in the morning sometimes and go, God, I still love her?
I don't really see her in the morning, but I wake up slightly as she's leaving for work and have her, you know, her goodbye kiss. And
But you know, but you understand what Bert's saying. Do you ever? Do you still have those moments where you feel like,
this woman really? I really love this woman. I love. She makes me giggle. I love the way she does the little things she does.
Yeah.
Well, then it's up to. It sounds like. I mean, I hate to jump in, but it sounds like you maybe kind of know what the problem is, and that's your communication with her. So why don't you?
That's not even like me. I'd say connection.
Connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. So try to reconnect if you want to.
I mean, it's about spending time face to face, you know, really spending that time listening and sharing and reciprocating. Can you do that?
I think so. I think I have problems with that.
Yeah, but Keith, you need to, if you want to save this marriage, you may just have to fucking overcome those problems.
Hey, listen, buddy, we completely get your communication problems on this.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to be callous at all. You definitely do have a hard time communicating and expressing your feelings. Look, this is my advice. Go out and get a bottle of wine with her. Get loose. Have a conversation. Tell her what you're feeling.
Yeah.
After a few drinks, you definitely talk a little quicker, but that's like a bartender's advice. You know, like Drew would tell you, definitely go see counseling, talk to a counselor.
Well, but I'm willing to give you the chance to get out there and put it on the line, to ask her out to dinner tonight. We're going to spend 3 hours, you know, at a nice dinner, face to face, and talking about this.
Get a car service so you both can drink guilt-free.
The way Bert's emphasizing the alcohol.
Make sure you drink heavily. Yeah, because let me tell you something. Well, sober dates are tough.
Some people have personality changes where they drink, where they become hostile and aggressive. So it could work against you, too. You never know.
I sat with my family in Hawaii sober and the very first night, and I literally sat there and I went, so this is it. So this is it. There's no sparkle on the end of this. It's just it. We eat dinner and we go to bed.
Wow.
So dinner with a little booze and so maybe like a fun cosmopolitan and write a list, man. Like write a list of like, this is what I'm doing wrong. And tell her what you're doing wrong to fix it. Do not put it on her.
Yes.
Don't bring up the extra dude.
Forget the you statements.
Yes.
Stay with I. I feel, I did, I'm trying to, I want to.
I feel like I could do this better.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how I can do this better?
And if that doesn't work, then please seek out professional help.
Yeah.
Okay, Keith, we're going to do that?
Yeah, I really want to get professional help. We've seen a counselor once and just don't have the money.
Oh, Jesus. Well, you can always go to universities or teaching institutions where they give prorated or free services, and those are usually well-supervised and quite good. But
or get in a taxi and just ask the cab driver to listen to your fight and tell him what you think.
Jesus.
This is like, I don't know.
All right, let's...
Good luck, man.
Let's go quickly to Matt. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Dr. Drew, how are you?
Good, what's happening?
Good. I just needed a little bit of advice. I've been in the AA program for 10 months sober now, and wanted to see any advice that you had for kind of getting back into the dating world and everything like that. I've had people tell me, kind of to stay away from dating people in the program, but it's kind of difficult to, at this point, date people that are drinking on dates and stuff like that. And I just wanted to see your thoughts on it.
Well, a couple things. Bert's looking slyly back at me, but here's a couple things. nothing till you've been sober a year. So you got two more. You got 2 more months to go.
Yeah, haven't you seen the Sandra Bullock movie? Get a plan.
I know you've been told that, number one. Number two, nothing more dangerous than two newbies in the program hanging out together.
Oh, really?
That is, they look at one another and they see life preservers and they grab and it's an anvil. They just sink to the bottom together.
Yeah.
They're the worst. It's absolutely the worst possible situation is to have two newbies in a romantic involvement. So if you were to date somebody in the program, first of all, you will be scrutinized because it's called 13 stepping. And it's somebody who has to have at least 5 years of sobriety, at least, preferably more like 10. But I also would discourage you in the strongest terms from dating people in the program. Date people who aren't alcoholic and don't drink and don't necessarily drink on dates or would respect your recovery. And there's lots of those people out there.
There really are a lot of those people out there.
Yeah. Bert doesn't hang with them, but they're... Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you something. I went to one AA meeting and like 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was the first thing they said is you cannot be in a relationship for a year. And I was like, I'm already seeing someone that I'm trying to get back with. And
what we say is don't make any changes in a year. If you're with somebody, stay with them. If you're not with somebody, don't get anything new going. Just keep everything stable and simple.
Dude, best of luck, man. More power to you.
Yeah.
Stay sober. Work on you. Get a hobby. Get into paddleboarding.
And realize that relationships, the most common thing that takes a recovering person out is a relationship.
Yeah.
You're very tender. You're very raw. You'll make a lot of the same old pattern mistakes. You can probably come from an alcoholic family system.
Think of yourself as a stock option, okay? Right now, you're accruing... equity, right? Right now you're being sober, but you're working on you and you get in shape and you become interesting, maybe get a tattoo, grow your hair out. And then 2 months from now, 3 months from now, when you do meet that chick, you're that much more worse. So when you go public, you're a small Silicon Valley startup company just trying to get their feet off the ground. Think about yourself that way. And so now, just start bringing in Indians to figure out how to program, okay?
Camera support. That's exactly right.
And, yeah.
But really examine, start really looking at your relationships before you get involved with one, because always alcoholics got some issues there. And look at whether you had any sex and love addiction and talk to your sponsor about that stuff. Then, after 12 months, start to tiptoe into dating.
Yeah, start in a church. Go to a church.
No.
Yeah, meet a girl at church, right? They don't drink.
Maybe. It seems like...
Well, to go places where girls don't drink.
There you go.
Go to a library.
Maybe do drink. You've been 12 months sober. I mean...
You'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll be fine. All right, Bert, that does it. Bert Kreischer, Life of the Party, Stories of a Perpetual Man. Comes out May 27th, available on Amazon.
Hey, Matt,
the banner.
Don't read my book.
Or maybe it's cautionary. Maybe you should. No?
Maybe you'll feel good about yourself.
look for Bert on season 4, Trip Flip.
Yeah, or season 3 is airing right now every Wednesday night at 9 on Travel Channel.
Bert is the website, BertBert.com. Twitter handle at Bert Kreischer, KreischerKreischer. And come back again. This is fun.
I have so much fun talking to you. Anytime you want me, I will be here in a heartbeat.
Do you live nearby?
Yeah. I'm I was 13 minutes away.
Okay, done and done.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, we'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com.
This episode of the Dr. Drew Podcast was brought to you by Hulu Plus. Watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere with Hulu Plus on your TV or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. Shows like Family Guy, Once Upon a Time, New Girl, Scandal, and more. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/Drew or click on the banner at my website. That is HuluPlus.com/Drew, or check out the banner at DrDrew.com. Click through HuluPlus.com.